Well, I was amazed, that the Bering Sea fluctuates so much from like extremely unhealthy and really corrosive waters to obviously extremely healthy. And those of us who, eat from the Bering Sea realize that it's pretty productive.
It is a very highly productive place. It's actually one of the most highly productive places in the global oceans, in that primary productivity is really what underpins these highly productive fisheries in the Bering Sea. So every time you eat seafood, you're a beneficiary of that.
Yeah, but it's also the productivity that's maybe playing a huge role in this extreme swing.
Yes, that's also exactly true. It's sort of like when you go to the buffet and eat too much, you may not feel so good later. The ecosystem in a broader way is sort of responding in the same way. So when we have this very high primary productivity at the surface, what we're doing is pulling a lot of CO2, a lot of carbon dioxide out of the surface or out of the atmosphere and forming this organic matter, and fish and zooplankton and things like that eat it, but they can't eat all of it. And so some of that phytoplankton, some of that organic matter sinks to the bottom, where it becomes an additional feast. It becomes an additional feast for crabs. We have a very highly productive crab fishery in the Bering Sea for precisely this reason, the export of this phytoplankton. But it's also a feast for bacteria down there. So bacteria a lot of times don't like light, and so they live in the bottom waters. And this bacteria, the way that they eat is they release all of this CO2 that we pulled out of the atmosphere into the bottom waters. And so this CO2 forms these corrosive conditions that we're talking about.
So when you have increase, how are you, the model talked about the release, which is, I read about and heard about endlessly about the amount of sinking that was going on, that the absorption of the carbon, and that leading to acidification and corrosive waters. But now we have a seasonal release.
We do have a little bit of a seasonal release, and we were so surprised to find that, mainly because during the time when we're actually seeing this release is when the waters are covered by sea ice. So we're starting to understand that sea ice is not a perfect barrier between the ocean and the atmosphere. So during the fall, when bacteria are really feeding heavily and they're turning all of this organic carbon back into CO2, they're just filling the water column up with the CO2. Phytoplankton aren't producing anymore. It's too cold for them. It's too dark for them. And the water column is just really filling up with CO2. And some of that is percolating through open water back out into the atmosphere, and some of it's coming through sea ice.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is ground truthed?
This is ground truthed. That's made from direct discrete observations, so we can say with certainty that we saw that, and it's been corroborated in other sea ice regimes across the Arctic. The Bering Sea certainly isn't the only place where we see permeability through sea ice.
So were researchers prepared for the extent of variability in the various oceans, that the Bering is so different from the Chukchi and so different from the Beaufort, that all three seas actually are really different in terms of how they deal with carbon?
I think that one of the things that really surprises us is that every time we go out into the Arctic, it's really this undiscovered territory. And so a lot of times we don't necessarily know what to expect. Both the Bering and the Chukchi Seas are highly productive regions, and so we would expect them to behave similarly. The Beaufort Sea, not so much, so maybe it's a little bit different, but the ways in which it's different is really difficult for us to say sometimes. And that's why going out and doing all of this surging work in the Arctic as the U.S. assumes the chairmanship of the International Arctic Council is so important for us to be able to do.
Well, I'd love that. I mean, for you, New Current, how does that impact you?
So I have this perennial joke going with Bob Picard, the guy who discovered a new current up in the Arctic Ocean recently, that I'm trying to write a carbon budget that's talking about flow of carbon from the Bering Sea through Bering Strait, through the Chukchi, through the Beaufort, and into the Canadian archipelago. And every time he adds a current, my model breaks. So it would be really nice to have the to have the funded work to actually go out and find out what's going on. But Bob always tells me after I feed him that line that, you know, this is science, is that we don't know what's happening, and this is what keeps it fresh for us, is constantly being able to find out new things. So
you're writing a paper on this. Are you going to have to revamp your model with this current, or have you already done so?
Well, what was nice about Bob's talk this morning is that he actually had transport velocity for this current, which is new, and will actually help the model in the future. And so I keep talking about this lack of data, this lack of research that we have. And so we have, if you remember from geometry class, if you started writing a proof and you got lost in the middle and you didn't know what you were doing, but you knew what the answer was supposed to be, you could start at the back end and sort of work your way towards the middle and see if you could figure out how to make the two halves meet. And that's sort of where we are with the carbon work and the carbon budget that we're doing up there. So we have the front end and we have the back end. We just don't necessarily know what's meeting up in the middle. So we know what's happening over the shelf. We know what's happening in the basin. Bob and Phyllis and a lot of researchers at NOAA and the academic sector are really working hard to resolve the transport between those two pieces. And so that was Bob's new current today. And we're going to continue to keep figuring it out, try to make our proof meet in the middle.